And now it is time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here. I want to suggest that you pick up a pencil and paper because you might want to write something down. There might be some information you want to remember later. Something that is important, like our following announcement from the Alameda Creek News. The Alameda Creek cleanup is going to be happening April 19th. Help the Alameda Creek Alliance clean our adopt a spot at the bottom of the Niles Canyon on Saturday, April 19th. We will also be pulling invasive ivy off of trees in the riparian corridor. Contact Ralph, his email address, ralph@alamedacreek.org. He'll send you info about just how to do that. Once again, that's ralph@alamedacreek.org, and you can go to their website, www.alamedacreek.org, for more information. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter's Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, April 5th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. We will continue with our broom bash efforts, removing invasive non-native French broom in the oak woodland areas of Quail Hollow. Lee Summers will be leading this work party, so come on out and show your support. How do you get to Quail Hollow? Well, go up Graham Hill Road out of Santa Cruz as you come down into Felton. Turn right at the light. Go up East Zianti Road 2 miles. Turn left on Quail Hollow Road. Half a mile up on the right is the entrance to Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. And they will meet you at the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitats in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine, and it's probably the weather's going to be okay. But if things do get particularly unpleasant, they call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring those gloves and water. For more information, I guess program leader Lynn is out of town, so there's no point giving you her contact information. You can always go to the webpage at www.cruisecnps.org for more information. That's cruisecnps.org. Here's the update from the field for the Buffalo Field campaign for this week. The 6-month-long buffalo hunting season has resumed with 7 buffalo killed by treaty hunters this week. Officials have announced that hunting is now truly over for this season. At least this time, none of the buffalo killed were pregnant females. Montana Department of Livestock agent hazed a group of 14 buffalo away from visiting their relatives at a USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service GonaCon research facility, where captured wild buffalo are being held in captivity to be used in birth control experiments. The same agent attempted another haze on a different day, but came away with no buffalo. 2 buffalo have been hit and killed on separate occasions on Highway 89, which runs north and south from Livingston through the Gardner Basin. The Gardner Basin, one of North America's largest wildlife migration corridors, is always teeming with wildlife. And while most residents are used to watching out for elk, deer, bighorn, and bison, with a 70-mile-per-hour speed limit, lots of animals are sadly struck and killed. Wild buffalo continue to mainly roam freely in the Gardner Basin in the hundreds, bringing joy to many of Gardner's residents and visitors to this unique and world-renowned wildlife-rich region of America. It's really hard to describe how buffalo complete the landscape, how their presence lifts the spirit while they heal the land that they have for so long been absent from, how these lands have evolved with the Buffalo Nation and that have been their inherent birthright for hundreds of thousands of years, embrace their brief return. If you live in the Gardner Basin or other parts of southwest Montana, please write a letter to the editor of our local and regional papers and also call Montana officials and express how much you love that wild buffalo are roaming free. In the Hebgen Basin, near West Yellowstone, wild buffalo from the central herds are also moving west through the Madison River corridor towards Horse Butte and surrounding lands. Many look thin and tired, but very determined. Some are turning back, possibly to let friends know the living is a bit easier than up in the higher elevations. Highway 191 cuts through the heart of this important passage, and buffalo must cross or travel along it to access the lands that they need. On either side of the Hebgen Basin, Highways 20 and 287 also present great challenges. Here, unlike in Gardiner, wildlife on the freeways face more serious challenges with extended winter weather, three U.S. highways, and an enormous amount of 18-wheeler traffic, and cross-country travelers constantly moving through. Patrols have been busy helping warn traffic of buffalo on the highway, and so far no buffalo have been killed here. But until safe passage infrastructure is put into place, it is sadly only a matter of time. Buffalo Field Campaign is doing the best that we can, but the state needs to do more. As we move forward, we are going to gain more and more ground for the wild buffalo, so we must be ready. We humans must be willing to make changes that will allow us to coexist. There are many changes afoot, so go to their webpage to see important ways that you can participate in a positive future for wild buffalo. And one of those ways is to participate in Buffalo Field Campaign's spring and summer programs. Buffalo Field Campaign is looking for folks who can come soon and stay for some or all of the spring, and at least six people to help us spread the word to save the herds this summer. Buffalo Field Campaign needs volunteers right away and is also looking for help from June until the first week of September. Buffalo Field Campaign provides room, board, instruction, gear, and enthusiasm for saving the wild buffalo. You could be going into the field every day you can to witness for the buffalo. Go to their webpage for more information on volunteering with the Buffalo Field Campaign. The summer positions would entail working in our Buffalo Museum in West Yellowstone, Montana, tabling and camping inside Yellowstone National Park, and going to music festivals and summer events. Each week we will have you do a different job so you would not be stuck doing one thing the whole summer. Is spending your summer in the Yellowstone ecosystem and helping save the buffalo something that interests you, please contact the Buffalo Field Campaign. They promise this will be a summer you will never forget. And you can find out how to volunteer with the Buffalo Field Campaign by going to their webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And if you'd like to send them a donation, their address is Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call at 406-646-0070. And all of this information is available on their webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And the World Court has ordered a halt to Japan's scientific whaling in this story reported by Thomas Escrit. Additional reporting by Alistair Doyle in Oslo, Norway. Editing by Anthony Deutsch and Allison Williams, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Judges at the highest UN court ordered Japan to halt whaling in the Antarctic, rejecting its long-held argument that the catch was for scientific purposes and not primarily for human consumption. Tokyo said it was disappointed but would abide by the decision, while activists said they hoped it would bring closer a complete end to whaling around the world. The International Court of Justice sided with plaintiff Australia in finding that the scientific output of the whaling program did not justify the number of whales killed. The tribunal said no further licenses should be issued for scientific whaling, where animals are first examined for research purposes before the meat is sold to consumers. The research objectives must be sufficient to justify the lethal sampling, said President Judge Peter Tomka of Slovakia. In light of the fact the research program has been going on since 2005 and has involved the killing of about 3,600 minke whales, the scientific output to date appears limited. Japan signed the 1986 moratorium on whaling, but has continued to hunt up to 850 minke whales in the icy waters of the Southern Ocean, as well as smaller numbers of fin and humpback whales, citing a 1946 treaty that permits killing the giant mammals for research. Judges agreed with Australia that the research, which consisted of two peer-reviewed papers since 2005, based on results obtained from just nine killed whales, was not proportionate to the number of animals killed. Not by a long shot. Nine whales out of 3,600? Japan was deeply disappointed by the ruling, but it would comply, said Koji Suroko, the country's chief lawyer before the court. He said the government would need to study the ruling before taking any further action. The judgment is an embarrassment to Japan, but Tokyo could continue whaling if it devised a new, more persuasive program of scientific research that required lethal catch of whales, or if it withdrew from the whaling moratorium or the 1946 International Convention for the Regulation of Whaling. Whaling was once widespread around the world, but Japan is now one of only a handful of countries, including Iceland and Norway, that continue the practice on a large scale. The meat is popular with Japanese consumers who consider it a delicacy. Norway, the other main whaling nation, in 1993 shifted away from scientific whaling to commercial catches, where the meat is sold directly to consumers. The Norwegian Ministry of Trade, Industry and Fisheries said scientific research and catches for scientific purposes is of fundamental importance to any responsible fisheries nation, and the court ruling will therefore be given due attention. Norway set a quota of 1,286 minke whales in the North Atlantic in last year's summer hunt, saying the stocks are plentiful in the region. Fishermen rarely catch the full quota, partially because demand has sunk in recent years. Iceland and Norway do not say they are carrying out research, instead openly hunt whale meat for commercial purposes, meaning the ICJ's ruling has no immediate consequences for them. But they have not signed up for a global moratorium on whaling agreed by other countries. But activists say the ruling reflected a gradually changing climate that would put an end to whaling. Whaling is under immense scrutiny from the international community, and the pincer movement on these countries is ever tightening, said Claire Bass, wildlife campaigner for the World Society for the Protection of Animals. And here's the forestry update for March. I'm sorry, it's a few days late. Prepared by Jody Frediani, forestry consultant of the Loma Prieta chapter of the Sierra Club and director of Central Coast Forest Watch. Boulder Creek Timber Harvest Plan 1-13-82 SCR draws opposition. This 112-acre timber harvest plan was submitted to CAL FIRE in September of 2013. It underwent full review, then was recirculated in January of this year. Sometime during the following 30-day review period, neighbors along the proposed haul roads learned of the plan and submitted letters to CAL FIRE opposing the use of both Bloomgrade and West Hilton. The latter goes through Boulder Creek Golf and Country Club, as well as winding its way through a subdivision of approximately 40 homes. Approximately 80 loaded log trucks are anticipated to haul along Lower Bloomgrade and West Hilton Drive. Complaints run the gamut from potential damage to asphalt paid for by property owners on an unimproved county road, Bloomgrade, unstable segments of road that could fail on West Hilton, unimproved segments on Upper Bloomgrade, lack of county right-of-way, the county disputes this, and public safety issues. CAL FIRE has received 60 letters from concerned neighbors. Neighbors have also contacted their supervisor and had a meeting with his aide because the supervisor was out of town. CAL FIRE has requested that the registered professional forester, Joe Culver, prepare an alternatives analysis for all possible haul routes. Once this is received by CAL FIRE, a public meeting, not an official public hearing, however, will be set up on Supervisor McPherson's office to give the public a chance to discuss the issue. Other timber harvest plans currently under review, 113-107 Santa Cruz. The City of Watsonville Grizzly Flat Timber Harvest Plan is 130 acres in size and located in Rattlesnake Gulch Shingle Mill Gulch area. The registered professional forester is C. Vaughn and J. Culver. The second review was conducted March 12th. THP 114-009 Santa Cruz County is owned by Palfrey, Lana, and Wilder. And Palfrey et al. The THP includes 58 acres on Hester Creek. Jay Culver is the registered professional forester. The forester's responses to the pre-harvest inspection requirements were posted on March 14th. Timber Harvest Plan 114-16 Santa Cruz County, owned by Long, called the Long THP, consists of 124 acres in the Love Creek area. Jay Hildreth is the registered professional forester, and the RPF responses were posted on March 12th. Timber Harvest Plan 1-14-020, Santa Cruz. The Novogratzky Revocable Trust of 43 acres on Coralitos Creek with Jay Culver, the registered professional forester. That timber harvest plan was returned to the RPF on March 7th due to dozens of errors and omissions. The Domestic Water Inquiry noted the wrong distance by 30 miles. The plan does not note whether any landings would be constructed and says that cable yarding will be proposed but does not include such in the alternatives analysis. Sounds like that forester's going to have to get some work done. Non-Industrial Timber Management Plan 1-14-002, the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County, is proposing an NTMP on Star Creek. This is in the Pescadero Creek Aromas area. Consists of 341 acres with C. Vaughn, the registered professional forester, and his response was posted on March 19th. And finally, THP 112-014 SCR Major American Number 2, owned by the Howell Revocable Trust in the Soquel Demonstration State Forest Spanish Ranch THP, added 300 feet of truck road, new water course crossings, etc., on Soquel Creek and Fern Gulch. H. Tranmer is the registered professional forester. His responses were posted on March 10th. It's back, Jody writes, another attempt to alter regulation of non-industrial timber management plans. NTMPs, as they're known, were developed back in the late 1980s, early 1990s, as a way of providing regulatory relief to small timberland owners who are willing to develop long-term management plans for their forests. One of the giveaways was that the rules at the time of the plan approval would apply throughout the life of these plans, which, however, never expire. Additionally, no further multi-agency or public review would be required in perpetuity. Over time, these landowners and other small timber landowners have continued to complain that regulation is too stringent and costly. In recent years, we've seen at least one failed attempt to increase the acreage size allowed under NTMPs from 2,500 acres to 5,000. Last year, AB 904 created working forest management plans for small landowners up to 15,000 acres. Language was also inserted into AB 904 to provide more regulatory relief for small landowners with up to 320 acres. However, that language was inexplicably removed before the bill was approved. As readers of these reports will remember, in the 11th hour, all the provisions of AB 904 were excluded from the Southern Subdistrict. That's where we are here in Santa Cruz County, thanks in large parts to the efforts of Senator Jim Beal. Now, however, a new rule packet is under development at the Board of Forestry to create modified non-industrial timber management plans, or MNTMPs, for landowners with no more than 320 acres on an individual contiguous ownership. Folks interested in shaping the outcome of this new rule package can plan to attend Board of Forestry committee meetings to make their voices heard on this latest industry effort. The next such committee meeting takes place on April 8th in Sacramento. And there's been a bridge failure on Timber Harvest Plan 110008 up in San Mateo County. Oops, Big Creek's attempts to fix a legacy problem on the Butano lands they purchased years ago from Pacific Lumber have failed. As part of the approved Timber Harvest Plan, Big Creek planned to replace an old 36-inch diameter culvert that was located just above a 25-foot-high waterfall and where originally a Humboldt crossing had been constructed back in the 50s or 60s. There may also have been an old wooden culvert at the location at some point. According to Rich Sampson, CAL FIRE legacy practices conducted on that land included putting large amounts of fill into streams on very steep slopes. Humboldt crossings and wooden culverts were the style of the day. The Silver Bullet THP was originally prepared by Matt Davis, now staff to the Board of Forestry. According to a post-failure report by Thomas Spittler, engineering geologist for the state, the rusting culvert was replaced by a free-span bridge as part of THP 1-10-080 SMO. The crossing design included pulling the banks back to a 1 and a half to one slope, and establishing a 5-foot-wide channel that mimics upstream conditions. The THP was revised to include information on the final channel grade through the crossing site, but it was not clear how the final grade was to be maintained. But the new crossing failed in December of 2012 storms, and downcutting of the newly constructed stream bed during the storm was threatening to undermine the bridge and contribute sediment to the Class 2 tributary to Butano Creek. During the storm, Mr. Bud McCurry installed a redwood flume under the bridge and stopped the undercutting. According to a personal conversation with Rich Sampson of Cal Fire, Big Creek noticed sheeting in the channel immediately and took quick measures, including the use of plastic in the installation of the flume to prevent significant sediment mobilization. Based on site conditions, it appears the major factor contributing to channel downcutting and the partial collapse of the bridge abutments is the lack of stabilizing structure in the channel between the top of the bedrock fall and the downstream end of the reconstructed channel. According to Sampson, none of the multiple applicant and agency geologists involved in the original plan review recognized just how deep the creek fill was in the creek channel. As a result, it was not fully excavated, was available for mobilization, and therefore the footings were not properly anchored. Originally, during the review of the plan, Water Quality recommended that, if not already completed, Big Creek Lumber shall prepare a comprehensive road inventory and maintenance plan for all roads within their Butano Creek and Pescadero Creek watershed holdings. The inventory shall include, but not be limited to, a thorough road erosion assessment inventory and an erosion prevention treatment plan. In addition, the regional board staff lamented that the RPF did not retain the services of a certified engineering geologist to help characterize the geologic setting of the THP and provide mitigation recommendations with respect to tree removal, landslide, slope stability, roads, watercourse crossings, and related issues. The failing bridge was replaced by a 7-foot arch culvert in August of 2013, placed in the creek on top of the old fill. The adjacent landscape in the area is 90 to 100% slopes, too steep for placement of a culvert. The culvert intake is on bedrock, but the outfall rests on old fill. According to Sampson, all of the review team agencies gathered, including the Regional Water Board staff, currently undertaking development of a TMDL for the stream and reviewed the site and agreed upon the culvert replacement. Sampson feels confident that due to quick action on the part of Big Creek, no more than a half a yard of fill washed out at the bridge failure site. Butano and Pescadero Creeks are both 303D listed as impaired for sediment, and efforts to repair the Pescadero Marsh can only be hampered by additional sediment inputs from upstream activities. And a settlement agreement protects endangered murrelets, keeps Big Basin State Park campgrounds and facilities open. The California Department of Parks and Recreation has settled a lawsuit brought by the Center for Biological Diversity that will strengthen protection for the marbled murrelet in Big Basin Redwood State Park. The settlement agreement calls for state parks to continue with many existing programs and implement additional ones in the areas of garbage management, public education, signage, corvid management that includes ravens, crows, and jays, and active monitoring and research. State parks will also monitor the scarce birds and the management of corvid impacts, which will allow park managers to implement management practices based on those findings. And good news for the endangered birds. After months of legal posturing, the state and environmentalists haven't found common ground on bolstering protections for the endangered marbled murrelet in Big Basin State Park, paving the way for a makeover of the 112-year-old park. The deal actually takes aims at another bird, cutting down on the excessive number of ravens and blue jays in the park's visitor and camping areas. The birds often gather to pick through trash or pick up table scraps, but also prey on the eggs of murrelets. It should help the rare seabird that builds nests high on the branches of old-growth redwoods and has lost most of its habitat to logging. State Parks is already taking steps to implement the pact, which calls for better signs, as well as food lockers and indoor dishwashing stations for campers. It also calls for trash pickups throughout the weekends when garbage can overflow from bins, creating regular feasts for ravens and jays. The deal should mean better experience for park visitors and a better chance for several hundred marbled murrelets remaining on the Central Coast. And Townsend's Big Ear Bat has been listed. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife seeks public comment. These bats live in coastal redwood forests in addition to other areas. This recent listing decision has already begun to have an impact on local logging operations. Townsend's big-eared bat received protection under the California Endangered Species Act in response to a petition from the Center for Biological Diversity. In June of 2013, California Fish and Wildlife Commission named the bat a candidate for protection. Candidate status provides immediate protection for the bat, which occurs across much of the state, but is widely threatened by human disturbance and habitat destruction. Townsend's big-eared bats are found throughout most of California, including deserts, coastal redwood forests, and forests and woodlands in the Coast Ranges and central Sierra Nevada, but are concentrated in areas with caves and cave-like roosting habitats, such as mines, building bridges, basal hollows, and big old growth trees. They are highly sensitive to human disturbances of their roosts, nests, abandoning caves or other structures following human intrusion. Cal Fire states that given the candidacy, Townsend's big-eared bat now receives the same legal protections under CSEA as a threatened or endangered species, including a general prohibition on take of the species, and all THPs must reflect this change in status. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. We want to thank Jody Frediani, forestry consultant for the Loma Prieta chapter of the Sierra Club and director of Central Coast Forest Watch, for her monthly updates. The Earth First Update is produced every week right here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We want to thank you for listening. If you'd like to listen to a rebroadcast of this program, tune in tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you live in Moscow, Idaho, tune in on Monday evenings at 9:30 on KRFP's new high-power frequency of 90.3 FM. Or you can go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4all.net, and search for Earth First Update or Earth First Radio News. I'd like to add that radioforall.net is a service whereby programmers such as myself and other independent program producers can upload their shows, and then they are distributed throughout the independent and community radio network. And in addition to KRFP, I'm sure there are other stations who have not notified me yet that they are picking up my program on radioforall.net. It's just that radioforall.net is running out of money. They have a serious financial problem. Being on the internet costs money. Running servers and web pages costs money. And frankly, a few weeks ago, they were beyond broke. Thanks to help from listeners such as yourself, radioforall.net is making a comeback, but they can certainly use a donation. Please go to www.radioforall.net, and in the upper banner or the little star in the upper right-hand corner, click on that and find out how to make a donation to Radio for All and keep them and this program on the air. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio, is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Thanks again for listening.